From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome to the Jack and Spike Show. King 5 asks, what will it take to engage black voters? Donald Trump thinks it's shoes. So I guess we got to find a different way to go about that, right?
I don't know how. I don't know how to counter that. That's so spot on.
I mean, he thought it was shoes.
And a mugshot. They love it, like, when I'm indicted.
That's a version of racism. I-5 fully open after a person ran around and threw barrels on the highway. Goes back to my theory about how we're living in an open-air asylum. But before we get to all that, interesting piece over at the Seattle Times. As politics shift, there's a new Trumpiest neighborhood in Seattle. Ah, yes. The Seattle Times, trying to do fair and balanced reporting, trying not to enrage people by talking about the Trumpiest neighborhood. Did you know, Laura, that this neighborhood voted 32% for Donald Trump? A whole 32%. Ooh. Such a big deal. The Seattle Times, we have to write about this. The people have to know which neighborhood is the Trumpiest out there because, you know, people can't vote for somebody that they want to vote for because they think it might benefit them because that's wrong, right? That's all. We can't have a democracy in this system. What are we going mad? People can't vote. This is madness, right?
How do they know already? I thought we were voted in secret. Oh, it's that R&D. Is it? No, it's not the R&D on the envelope.
No.
Because they say that, like, of 99 votes, 7 were for Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
The rest were for Trump.
So this is a joke of an. I like Danny Westneat a lot. I like him as a human being. You can't call the CID the Trumpiest neighborhood in the city if there was a total of, 95 votes. And 7 of those were for Nikki Haley. Do you know what I mean?
Well, 95 Republican votes, so 88 were for Trump,
right.
And that's a literal.
Yeah, but I just think
that's a bloodbath.
When you do this thing of, like, what's the Trumpiest whatever, or it doesn't, the math doesn't really pan out in that way. Of course, people who are in the GOP, by and large, are going to be voting for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Does that make the CID Trumpy? Does that mean that we have a MAGA stronghold in the CID? No, not really. This is a way of extrapolating data out to kind of make a silly headline. And this is a shame because I really like Danny Westney. I think he does really good work. But this is just kind of silly, right?
So we were surprised to see these numbers coming from the traditionally Democratic CID.
Why were we surprised?
Because that particular community of immigrants has never voted really GOP strong.
Yeah.
It's been trending in that direction, but this is the most they ever have.
Mm-hmm.
Danny's piece cites it's about education. It's about, because Broadmoor was a closed gay community, always was the most Republican, I don't want to even say Trumpiest, because they voted more for Nikki Haley than Trump did, the Broadmoor college-educated residents of Broadmoor. But in the CID, they find more folks without college degrees. Danny calls it the diploma divide. As we're coining phrases on a daily, the diploma divide of Republican voters without college degrees, the CID now is the Trumpiest neighborhood in Seattle.
Right, and I just think that that's a wrong, I think it's a wrong way to talk about it. I think it's
I agree with you.
Wrong way to contextualize it. And moreover, I think that there's this weird thing, a cultural shift that I don't really like seeing, where if in my mind, if someone wants to vote for Donald Trump, it doesn't make any difference to me whatsoever. I would tell them not to.
Mm-hmm.
But what I see is this encroaching kind of pathogenic idea around it, where a vote for Trump is effectively, it makes you a sick or damaged person. And I think that that's wrong because it permeates the rest of our body politic. So, for instance, I see a lot of clips of saying, if you vote for Joe Biden, you're voting for death, right? That's what people say.
Yeah.
You vote for D, you're voting for death. I've heard that a number of times in my life. I think that that ideology, that philosophy that people have, where if you vote a particular way, that makes you A, a bad person, B, an ignoramus, or C, somehow someone who's broken or damaged. That's really not good for society for a number of reasons, because then we have something that makes us feel a certain way, and then we ascribe meaning based on that feeling, and then we have actions based on that meaning. Does that make sense?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I call it the CNN effect, okay? So
that's well placed.
CNN makes me feel a certain way about Donald Trump, bad. Then I make meaning from that. Trump is a bad person. Then I take action around it. All MAGA people belong in jail, right? I mean, this is it's really a sickness that's on both sides of the American body politic.
It really is.
And for Danny Westneat coming in and kind of exploring this data in this way, it is such a small subset of data. 95 people total, 7 of which for Haley, 88 of which for Donald Trump. That is almost insignificant, statistically speaking. It's almost irrelevant.
It is a minute subset.
Right.
But is it indicative of a trend?
No.
You don't think so?
I mean, you could call it the diploma divide. I mean, more people without college diplomas vote for Donald Trump, even though he's got great ideas like 100% tariffs. Am I right or am I right? That's not going to go wrong in any way, shape, or form.
I heard that this weekend. Yeah.
We're going to be talking about that later. But, you know, I think that there's another story that I wanted to segue into that kind of talks about this as well, which is what will it take to engage black voters? This is a piece that was written over at King 5. And what I find so very fascinating about this is that black voting throughout the United States is very, very low, despite the fact that there was such a difficult fight to get the right to vote, right?
Yeah.
And yet we see this kind of generational, I don't know what you want to call it, this kind of generational cascade where people just don't vote. This is Devonte and Parson, and he was the first person in his family to vote despite being a felon. Here's what that sounded like.
My mom's never voted. My dad's never voted. You know, nobody's voted. I'm the first person to do this right now. I paid my dues for what I've done. That moment was saying, you've arrived. You're here now. You did that. Now let's go.
Right. And also, felony disenfranchisement is maybe one of the most racist things we hold on to as a society.
Agreed.
And I do believe that we need to get rid of it at the federal level. I mean, felony disenfranchisement is such a joke. And I have not heard a single good argument as to why felony disenfranchisement should be around.
And I know that it's handled on a state-by-state basis, and I know there were states who tried to pass laws at the polls about restoring felons' voting rights.
Right.
And then those I think it was Florida where the vote of the people was ignored. Governor refused to or found a way around that.
DeSantis? You're telling me that DeSantis did something fascistic? I would have never believed it.
It's true. They should do it at a national level. You're right. And that's part of the Voting Rights Act.
DeSantis did something evil? He did what? I'm told that this is America's governor on the beacon of freedom. I thought democracy mattered to Ron DeSantis. You're telling that the will of the people said that they should get rid of felony disenfranchisement in Florida.
Right.
And you're telling me that that stalwart American who wears stars and stripes boots, stilettos, you're telling me that that fine man would take away the voice of the people? Is that what you're trying to tell me here?
Yeah, basically. And speaking of disenfranchisement, that's kind of what happened in Florida.
Mr. Parson also said that the voter registration he was handed was intimidating. Here's what that sounded like. I believe we have it. Yeah,
I looked at that stuff, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to set it on my table. 3 weeks go by. You know, I'm going to put it in the dresser drawer. A year goes by. I still ain't filled it out because I was scared. It's something that I've never experienced, something I didn't understand, I didn't know. Most people are not going to stop and ask you, hey, did you vote? Do you know how? Do you need help? So then you just kind of become unheard. You know what I mean? Or remain unheard.
Yeah. You know what? I think that there's another aspect that we're not talking about here is that I think that largely members of the black community are not asked how they feel about politics. And quite frankly, I don't think a lot of Americans, I say this as a statement of opinion, I don't think a lot of Americans care how a lot of other voters feel about politics in the United States. Unless you're in your little cadre.
Your tribe.
Your champagne socialist, your whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people really care, which is a real shame, because to be interested in another human being is to be a fundamentally curious person. And so how can you engage with something when the system is designed to fail you? Has anybody ever thought about that with our voting system? How do you engage with a system when it's designed to fail you? When we know that we have these two parties, I'm just speaking purely from a political theory perspective here. We've got these two competing parties that each have their corporate donors, their big money corporate donors who are backing them. And they all know that they're going to get their sweet government subsidies and their sweet government kickbacks. And the people are at the very bottom of the totem pole. My assessment of this is that largely in the black community, they are hyper aware of this. And so they are saying, why would I want to engage in a system that doesn't work for me? Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I wish I knew the answer to the question. It's a great question. Because no group is counted upon more by the Democratic Party than African Americans, especially African American women.
And it's so incredibly small, right? And I think that's a
difference maker.
But a difference maker. And I think that that's the real trick of it, is that we as Americans have been fooled into thinking that somehow voting for Donald Trump or voting for Joe Biden is going to be the solution to our problems, whatever it might be, when in actuality, what we see is we kind of live in like a techocracy. We live in a world of corporate overlords. And what really we should be voting for is President Coca-Cola, Vice President Goodyear. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The system that we have
Texaco. Chevron.
Right, exactly. And the Secretary of State Doritos is out here going to be talking about what we're going to do.
He's with that sweet, sweet corn money right there. Yeah.
So, like, I'll give people a really quick example. In the Nixon administration, his Secretary of Commerce was dealing with a real economic stagnation, a serious problem. And so he's trying to figure out, how do I get people to spend more money on consumer goods stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes to the corn industry and he says, well, let's subsidize the corn industry and basically fill as much food as we possibly can and have it be corn-based. High fructose corn syrup, whatever it is.
High fructose corn syrup tsunami started?
Exactly. So it starts back in the Nixon administration because they needed to make food cheaper because food was coming in somewhere in the neighborhood of about a third of Americans' monthly expenditure was solely on food and food goods. So he's like, how do I make food cheaper so people have more time and more money to go out and buy useless trash that they don't need to try to jumpstart the economy? Subsidize corn, make food super cheap, and then everybody goes out and now we're all fat and dying as a result of the poison that we put in our bodies on a daily basis. Now, how I relate that to the black voter is when you go to someone who is at the most marginalized position in society, and what do they see? They see nothing but government kickbacks and subsidies for these megacorps that aren't even really people. It is so disenfranchising and so disheartening. Why even engage with the system? And that's why I think generationally, black Americans have steered away from participating in our democracy, because why would I do it when it's just going to go to Goodyear and Apple and Google and blah, 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 right?
So is it too late in the game and I keep saying for the Democratic Party, because that's who's losing African-American voters.
Yeah.
In record numbers. And it cannot be that because the Trump policies and demeanor is so engaging. I don't think that's the reason. I think that black African-American voters have felt taken advantage of, neglected, and take it for granted.
Well, yeah.
For generations. So my question is there still time? I've heard numerous pundits say that there has to be a better, not just a better messaging from the Democratic Party for African-American voters, but actually substantive policy issues that are going to directly benefit these communities.
Well, I mean, this is going real deep political theory here.
We can come back. Let's chew on that,
Nicholas,
for a month.
You want to go real deep with some political theory,
my friend? We're going into the deep end now.
Put your waders on.
Black voters, where have they traditionally gone when they don't vote Democrat and they don't vote Republican? If we hearken back to the 1960s and we look at the black political movements, they were primarily what, Mr. O'Neill, if you can remember?
Democratic, yes.
Socialist in nature.
Okay.
Socialism, right? So if we look at a lot of black activism in the 1960s and the 1970s, the concept of it was that if the state can't do it, we will do it for ourselves. This is the Black Panthers to a T.
If the state
won't protect our children, we'll do it.
I thought you meant from a government perspective. No, from the social perspective.
I'm talking about both. If government won't do it for us, we will do it ourselves. So we'll have our own schools. We'll have our own breakfast programs. You can go back, read about this, right? Fred Hampton, Bobby Seale. These guys were talking about doing it themselves. It's a very socially conservative and yet at the same time communally socialist kind of philosophy, which still exists within the black community to this day. And so I think when people say, well, where are the black voters going? They're going to like the DSA. They're going to other organizations to which they can best fulfill the needs of their community from within their community.
Who can blame them? That seems like the only practical solution left.
All right. So I-5 was fully open after a person ran around and threw traffic barrels on the highway.
Sorry.
Spike, gee whiz, what are you doing up at 5 o'clock in the morning?
Spring fever, baby. It hit 70 at my house. My brain cooked. What
exactly.
Can I tell you?
So I just wanted to touch on this story briefly because this is one person who shut down I-5 because they were Looney Tunes, right? Yeah. They're having a very hard time mentally, and they're going around and they're throwing barrels and they're hopping on a hood of cars and whatnot.
Oh.
And I think that this is what you get when you have an open air asylum in a society and when you have people who are deeply mentally ill. But also that I know a lot of people would just chalk that up to drugs or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think the deeper reading of it is that that is someone who is acting out because they are basically trying to showcase I cannot take care of myself. And so they do it in the most extreme way possible.
Effective.
Right. Very effective.
Very effective mechanism.
But then it made me think about, look at all the markers that we see on a daily basis around Seattle of someone basically putting up a white flag that says, I cannot take care of myself.
Yeah, that's so true.
And look at what we do. We put the put on the old blinders.
That's what I did.
And we ignore it. And we go right on by it. And so I think that what needs to happen is there needs to be a critical mass moment where we all realize that we've got 10,000 people that can't take care of themselves and are in desperate need of services.
So I had this, you're talking about the need and the cause and the effect, whatever. I had this moment on Sunday morning. Took my kid back to school, was driving back to the home alone in the car, and there was a gentleman at a bus stop in a Christmas hat singing at the top of his lungs. Clearly a mental illness, clearly I'm not sure it was drug addiction.
Maybe he was just filled with the Christmas spirit, Spike. What do you think about that?
But I put my blinders on. I literally rolled up my windows and waited at the red light to turn and what could I have done?
Well, I mean, you can't really do anything for that person. But I think that what you do is, you know, I got an email from somebody. They were upset at me because of how I was talking about taxes. And they said, oh, Jack, what if somebody in Olympia hears you talking about taxes and then they think that they can tax it? This person is not very bright. But they said, what if someone in Olympia hears you and they think that, oh, they can tax us more?
I'm on radio so we can tax like we want.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought to myself, my dude, my guy, like, if you want change, you have to advocate on behalf of yourself. Like, don't rely. So what I'm saying to you, Spike, is that if you want change, you have to advocate on behalf of people who will initiate that change. That's how you cure impotency,
okay.
I think.
Thank you.
In the face of overwhelming state power. Speaking of, by the way, one of the most popular conservative commentators went viral. Did you see this video?
I don't think I have.
Oh, man.
I steered clear of the social media this weekend.
This is really good for Terminally Online because there was this new information that was released about Michael Jackson's death. And this person, yeah, crazy, right?
Right.
And so this person started talking about, well, who controlled Michael Jackson's money? And got a little Kanye West with it. Got a little.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. But
this is a serious voice.
I kind of want to talk about the media machine and what it does to people because it takes good people and it makes them disgusting. Right, Laura? Right?
Sure.
Thank you. All right. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this.
The internet can be a dark and often dangerous place. Only one man has the courage to go where no sensible person would go. Jack Stein is Terminally Online.
Terminally Online, exploring the deepest, darkest reaches of the internet so you don't have to. Spike, did you know that I'm on the receiving end of a tremendous amount of anti-Semitism?
I have heard of this. I'm mystified, but not
it's because of my last name.
Yeah,
it's my last name. It sounds Jewish, but it's not spelled Jewish. Something that Billy Sunshine always likes to say about me. Billy will be on tomorrow, by the way, for those of you who are Billy Sunshine addicts. But anti-Semitism has always been of interest to me, being that you have your out-and-out anti-Semites, your devotees, and then you have your kind of closeted anti-Semites. It's kind of like Taylor Swift fans, do you know what I mean? You're either like an out-and-out, I can't get enough of it.
Full-on Swiftie, sure.
You're like kind of hiding it a little bit. You don't want to share. You don't want to share with other people. Candace Owens, who works for the Daily Wire, she fell into a heap of trouble last week because on her podcast, she's been talking about the lawsuit against Sean P. Diddy Combs. Have you read about this lawsuit?
This is the accusation that he is taping people having sex.
Yeah, underage girls connected to Jeffrey
Epstein.
Parties
at his place.
Right.
Blackmail, right?
Yeah, blackmail.
Okay.
And so Candace Owens has decided that she's going to get involved with this to a certain or lesser degree. And she started talking about Michael Jackson, who's named in this lawsuit for some strange and odd reason, and how there are people out there that convinced Michael Jackson when he was, right before he died, to change all of the information in his will to give a certain amount of his estate to the people that he was suing for the rights to his own music. I know this is very complicated,
okay.
But we've got Candace Owens talking about this, right? Okay, she breaks it down for us.
It is a fact, by the way,
that Michael Jackson did keep a list of people in the industry that he said were his enemies, okay? On that list were people that all happened to be Jewish. And again, that was just Michael Jackson being crazy and being a raging anti-Semite. Ian Carroll also investigates those claims as well. Take a listen.
And yes, Jackson did say that the Jews are probably referring to the Jews in the music industry are like leeches and that they took everything from them and that they did it on purpose. But when you look into those allegations or those insults, you realize that because of his will that was probably fake and filed right before his death, John Branca was put in charge of his estate.
None of this really matters. The point of the matter here is, so what Candace Owens is basically doing, it's a really interesting thing that anti-Semites do. It's actually fascinating when people say, just happen to be blank, right? So, for instance, if I were to bring up, what's a recent tragedy that you can think of? What's a recent event that you happen to think of, right?
I'm trying to be really careful here.
I'll give you an example.
Go ahead,
there
please.
Were a bunch of women who were attacked by a cougar recently, and so happened to be white women who were out trying to kill cougars. Do you see what I'm saying? I can do that argument with any... When people say who just so happened to be blank, what they're really doing is they're trying to shoehorn or incept the idea that group of people as a whole, writ large, are somehow responsible for that.
I heard that. How
absolutely insidious anti-Semitism is. And then, you know, there's this whole thing about her going back and forth with this rabbi or whatever it is. That's not really important because this rabbi is a little bit of a nutcase. But the point that I wanted to make here is that anti-Semitism is pretty much everywhere to a greater or lesser extent. And when people do this thing of just so happen to be Jews, imagine that with anything else. Like, for instance, did you guys know that the 17 largest banks in the world are controlled and led by Catholics? Did you know that?
No.
Just so happen to be Catholics. Am I right or am I right? For some reason, nobody does this, like, you know, Catholic Bank of America conspiracy nonsense, because we all understand that that's wrong. But the second you say Jews, all of a sudden people's ears start to perk up. Now people are interested. And it's kind of embarrassing for me to watch someone like Candace Owens, who has a degree in journalism, who has done fantastic journalism in the past, then do these really underhanded winks and nods to the worst parts of her audience, right? Which are anti-vax, anti-Semitic, crazy people, because she understands that it gets good traction. And she understands that she'll get the headline from it. And she understands that people will say, Candace Owens is being it. And then she says, I'm not being anti-Semitic. And then it's a whole media machine and we all fall for it. And we're all worse for it because Candace Owens has got to get her Google metrics up for when she redoes her contract negotiation.
And she's on the Daily Wire?
On the Daily Wire network, right.
Because it's the rabbi, is it Shmuley? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, Shmuley.
Is, you know, in this wild, wild weekend of Candace Owens, the anti-Semitic... comments. I'm being careful here. Reverend Shmuley said we're gonna sue you back to the Stone Ages, essentially, and we're gonna deplatform you, and we're gonna take down Daily Wire as well.
That's not right.
That's what he's.
No, I know that's what he says.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not. If you have a problem with something that somebody says, you need to confront the arguments on their merits.
Well, he's saying that Candace Owens better have proof that the Jews killed Michael Jackson.
You can say the Jews, guy. Okay. I mean, Jews like being called Jews. Am I wrong or am I wrong?
Well, not when you're saying they killed Michael Jackson. I think they probably don't.
That's probably a very good point, right?
Well, I mean, so this is ugly.
It's very ugly. Yeah.
The internet is this everything? Is this always out there?
The internet is becoming more anti-Semitic, which is what I really wanted to talk about. The internet, by and large, is becoming much more anti-Semitic from both the right and the left. And it's really very weird that far left socialist communists are like bedfellows with neo-Nazis. Do you know what I mean?
I hear you. I see you on college campuses all the time.
Right. And so the question you have to ask yourself is, why is this the case? And this is something that goes back to, like, you have to go all the way back to the origins of the plague to understand why anti-Semitism has just been rot throughout Western civilization for about the better part, about 500 years. And it is a kind of a cultural sickness that we need to do away with, because we don't do it to any other ethno-religious group. It simply doesn't exist. We don't do it to Coptic Christians. We don't do it to Mormons. We don't, you know what I mean? We don't do it
right.
to Catholic.
No, of course not.
We don't do it to anybody else. But for some strange and odd reason, when it comes to our Jewish brothers and sisters, all of a sudden it's open. Like, this would not fly on any other network. any other network, you could not say just so happen to be Jews in the same way that I could not say like, oh, well, they just so happen to be black guys or they just so happen to be white guys.
Right.
Because people understand the kind of hatred underneath all of that.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what we need to address.
Yeah, the fact that both sides feel so comfortable.
They love it on the internet. I don't know why. It's a bizarre, you know, I guess, vestige of...
We should have one big meeting for everybody that... Because, boy, wouldn't that be a fun get-together?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, the white nationalists, the neo-Nazis, and the pro-Palestinian college students get together and see, look who you're hanging out with.
Yeah.
Look who your bedfellows are. Still, you feel comfortable? You happy? Mom and dad happy? Mom and dad still going to pay for college this semester if you're hanging out with these guys with the neck tattoos and whatnots?
Right. I don't think so.
Might be a little wake-up call.
10-acre slice of Seattle is for $1.5 million, but there's a catch. It's land that you don't want. You don't want
it's
it.
A nice piece of land, bud.
You don't want it. What's Billy Sunshine just texted me 18,000 times during that segment. He's deeply upset about it.
Oh, right. Forgot to send Billy a new calendar. Dang it. Dang it. It's in my notes.
All right, we'll talk about that new plot of land when we get back right after this. Everybody, guess what? There's a $1.5 million lot in North Seattle. It's 10 acres, big old lot. You can put a lot of houses on that. Only problem is that it's the Crown Hill Cemetery, so you're going to have to write a lot of apology letters if you start putting in houses. Am I right or am I right?
Well, I'm amazed that this property is available.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
You thought this through.
I recently purchased the Crown Hill Cemetery for the low, low price of $1.5 million, and I regret to inform you that your great-great-great-grandfather, Abraham, shall be removed from his grave and shall be placed in a U-Haul, at which point he will be returned to you.
To you. How?
To you. At my expense.
At my expense, of course. And whichever format you'd
in
like.
In whichever format you would
respectfully would like to have the body presented to you in. That's good.
And I just want to let you
check
know.
Check the box below.
Check the box below. And please include a most recent address so timely delivery can be undertaken.
When someone will be home to receive the package.
And I am very sorry that I have decided to desecrate this land for my own corporate capitalist gains. Now, how did this happen? That's the way that I would write that letter, by the way.
Nice.
So basically the longtime owner, the business went into receivership,
sure,
which is not good. But here's the thing about cemeteries is with cemeteries, such an antiquated way to hold bodies in a place.
Yep.
And moreover, it's part of kind of this Christian death cult thing that I happen to believe in.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesus comes back, we're all going to be risen, right? So Jesus is going to bring back the zombie army. A lot of people don't know this. You got to read the book all the way through. When Jesus comes back, zombie army comes up, and then we all go to heaven, right?
Yeah, I thought it was a pass-through, right? They're not staying here. They're moving on.
Yeah, we hang out for a little while,
okay,
right? We hang out with Jesus for like 4 or 5 days, and then we all get to go to heaven with Jesus. But this is a weird vestige of Christianity that I think that we need to understand doesn't really work anymore. We got to we have these huge spaces that are useless, and we call them golf courses and cemeteries, right? And this is something that I think we need to deal with. Laura, why are you making eyeballs at me right now? Why are you making eyeballs? How is this funny? We're having a serious conversation about death and golfing.
You can think of cemeteries as, golf courses too, except they're exclusionary, as green
spaces. As are most
spaces.
Cemeteries, by the way.
That's true. Yeah.
Green spaces we're not allowed on. It's not going to take my dog to take a dump there.
Right, exactly.
Even if I pick it up.
Exactly. I mean,
you can walk through most cemeteries. I've walked through this cemetery.
Is it an enjoyable experience?
Yes, it's very
beautiful.
Quiet.
Are you that girl? Are you trying to be extra like that, where you take Instagram photos in a cemetery being like, oh, mood right now?
Can you imagine posing next to
mood right now?
So dead right now. I was amazed that this, I understand the financial difficulties of moving forward in the internment industry.
Yeah.
It's, nobody's doing it anymore. It's much cheaper, much more cost effective. Or, you know, dad's on an urn on the mantle.
Yeah.
Or he's being shot off into space or launched, like you, I say, into a green belt.
Out with a bang. One of the greatest ideas I've ever had in my life.
But
great company.
I'm amazed that you can
that web domain.
I got to get it.
You can buy this and move the bodies. I didn't know you could do that.
Yes, you can.
And I've seen Poltergeist.
Well, they,
so I'm thinking I need to buy this place.
Well,
let me tell you why.
Sure.
My home is of an equal value. I hate to say this out loud, but my home has been appraised as an equal value to 10 acres on Crown Hill.
Yeah.
10 acres.
Yeah.
So I'll just swap, head up. They can then sell my, much easier to sell my house.
Ah.
Right? So now I'm sitting on, literally sitting on 10 acres of former resting home.
Right.
So you got to relocate the bodies, but I have a different idea. What if every home that's built on this has one of the residents of this Crown Hill Cemetery in their home, a permanent living, deceased person in your basement or in, you know, under the foundation.
Okay.
And you get to pick.
Well,
you get to pick which poltergeist or which spirit.
Which ghost.
You guess.
So, okay. So I'll tell you like this. Like when I was in New Hampshire, a lot of the people who bought land in New Hampshire when it was first colonized, it doesn't make any difference. When it was first settled, they have their family plots
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So you'll drive into somebody's driveway and then there will be six or eight or a dozen
stones,
headstones that are there,
sure,
that by law you can't move. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, why don't we just do that everywhere? If you want to bury grandma in the backyard, I feel like you should have the right to bury grandma in the backyard. Just to take up a little bit. You know, that's, I'm just saying.
Now, there was a legislation proposed in the state of Washington within the last year and a half, I will say.
Yeah.
That they want to have the right to have home interment.
Right. I think that that's perfectly acceptable. I don't think there's anything weird or creepy. I wouldn't do it. But if somebody else wants to do it, Laura, I don't think it's weird.
Except for the fact that you can never move once you do that.
Nick, would you buy a house that's got a...
You have to tell the people that you're selling to.
Would you buy a house that got a body in the backyard?
I'm not superstitious,
what
just a little stitious.
What if you already have and don't know it?
But like, I'm just saying, you walk into a house, you love it. Big open floor plan, it's got Nick written all over it, right? And then all of a sudden they go, hey, listen, just so you know, in the backyard there's a little, let's call it shrine to the former owner's dearly beloved grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's part of the signing, the thing is you got to leave it. And then you walk in the back and then there's a mausoleum. Would you still buy the house?
I mean, last I checked, Amityville Horror is a fictional story, right? I think I luck's on my side.
Okay. All right.
Well, you're that guy at the beginning of a horror movie. This can't be real.
Hey,
this legend.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, I'm going to try to cure Spike's Trump derangement syndrome.
You going to what?
I'm going to try to cure it because there was a Spike. Spike and I both saw this clip of Trump over the weekend talking about the auto industry.
Yeah. Well, is that what he was talking about?
And
is that what he's doing?
And everybody took it out of context.
Out of context.
And everybody went insane. And I'm not a fan of former President Donald Trump, but let's be fair with people. And let's be kind
to
people.
Sure. Yeah. And let me say there's a cure.
There's a cure for TDS. Trump's lawyers say it's going to be real hard to post that big old bond he's got in that civil fraud judgment. And also, scanners are just sitting at the border, which could potentially halt a large portion of the fentanyl coming into the country. And there's someone standing in the way of that. Right in the way of it. And I say, why, my friend? We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.